Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello, once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000. Thank you so much for downloading, listening, and sharing this show with anyone you know. In this week's episode, we dive back into our exploration of movie genres by talking about romantic comedies that have been around longer than you may realize. Our big topic is going to be looking at the history of romantic comedy, some of the stalwarts of the genre, and a special feature, romantic comedy or not romantic comedy. Our top five will be top five couples in romantic comedies, not necessarily the top five romantic comedy movies, but the top five relationships that Brian has seen played out in the number of movies he's seen. So, Brian, before we get to that big topic and that top five, tell everyone once again where you are on your quest for 10,000.
77,313.
And how many movies have you watched today?
Three.
So you started the day at 7,310, 7,313 now here near the end of the day. Tell us what those movies were.
Okay.
Just tell us about the best of those that you feel you saw.
Okay. Well, I started the day off with a British film from 1968 about boarding schools, Malcolm McDowell's screen debut, a movie called If. And it was fairly good. It was a little surreal and very satirical on what was going on, particularly in upper-class Britain in the late 60s. I changed gears completely and moved to a contemporary film, one that came out earlier this year, and it was a sequel to one of my personal least favorites from the last couple years, and this was God's Not Dead 2.
We don't need to talk about that one right now. What was your third movie? No.
And then I to cleanse my palate, I went from God's Not Dead 2 to a movie about a aging Woody Allen, who plays a reluctant pimp, who pimps after his business falls apart. He pimps out his employee to a couple of women who are interested in perhaps a little threesome action. And his employee is John Turturro. And
I won't say
Fading Gigolo. And it wasn't a great movie, but it was good. It was fine.
I'm glad you told me beforehand that John Turturro and Woody Allen was in that film, because if you just said Fading Gigolo, I would have thought it was the threequel to Deuce Bigelow, the circle of those stories.
Fading Gigolo would have been an even better movie.
It could have been. So it sounds like you may be we're pleasantly surprised by If.
If was very good.
Of those three.
Well, If was highly recommended. I mean, If I watched because it was on a lot of lists of movies, of great movies from the 60s and movies you need to see. So I kind of knew it would be decent, not horrible, but it was very good.
So you went really good to God's Not Dead to fairly interesting, it sounds like, with Fading Gigolo. I always like a good John Turturro movie.
I do like John Turturro. And, you know, he's sort of, from the time of Big Lebowski and the Jesus character to now, he's sort of morphed into this respected kind of elder statesman of indie cinema in a way that maybe he wasn't. You know, he doesn't appear to be quite as cutting edge, but he's still fairly interesting
He's kind of like the that guy of that guys. I had to characterize who he was.
He's expanded a little bit because he's been in the Transformers movies now.
True.
So he's got some mainstream success that maybe you wouldn't have thought was in his future.
Yeah.
When he was.
True. And he had a starring turn in the last movie I saw, too, on Netflix, Quiz Show.
He was fantastic
for a while,
that.
And it was on Quiz Show, of course.
Oh, that's a great movie.
In that, good movie there too. So there you have Brian's most recent films. And of course, with we're recording this right before the Thanksgiving holiday, other films coming out soon. Brian's probably sure to add a couple of films here before the week is over, including maybe some new ones at the box office. One of the films that I always kind of tend to think about at this time of year actually relates to our big topic of romantic comedies. Love Actually, one of my favorite romantic comedies of all time, debuted kind of the first part of November in the mid-2000s. Has become kind of an iconic film in romantic comedies. But, you know, it might be the quintessential romantic comedy, all these different storylines, these different kind of versions of romance and all that sort of thing. But I'm kind of interested to hear from you, Brian, something you've said before, that romantic comedies didn't simply just start in the 80s and 90s, like many of us might assume, and culminate maybe here in the 2000s with such films like Love Actually. Romantic comedy's long been a genre of film. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested to hear about, maybe first, what do you consider kind of some of the earliest romantic comedies? Okay. And then to talk maybe a little bit about what about that genre has stayed the same over the decades, and what seems to have changed with it as well.
Okay, well, you can go back to Chaplin's movies in the 20s. City Lights is just a great romantic comedy about a guy who is falling in love with a woman. He's a homeless guy, and like the little tramp character. He falls in love with this woman who's blind. And in order to win her affection, you know, he finds out that there's a surgery that she can have to restore her sight. Well, in order to fund this surgery, he enters into a boxing competition that he's ill-prepared for. And of course, you know, in typical Chaplin fashion, he wins in spite of himself. And he gets the money to her, but then he is afraid that once she has sight, she won't be able... She won't care for him because now she'll see who he is. So, but she winds up finding out who it is through other means, and they wind up together. But it's a very sweet movie. I will say this, in those early romantic comedies, I think there was one, it was kind of like the guy was a big underdog and was very much, the girl was out of his league, and for some reason she wound up falling for him anyhow. And then I think we morphed into the stuff in the 40s and 50s with Cary Grant and Rock Hudson. The guy was suave and sophisticated, and it was sort of the girl who was mm-hmm. lucky to get him. Mm-hmm. And then I think we went back a little bit recently. We started to go back to where it's the nerdy underdog who is now, you know, somehow proving his mettle to the girl. So it's sort of been this swing back and forth about what kind of guy is the idealized romantic comedy hero. But it's
you know, a couple of things you mentioned there too kind of hit on what probably are some of the primary elements in a romantic comedy. You know, a very simple story frame. Someone is pining away for someone else. And then there's these extravagant lengths they go to, to somehow prove themselves worthy, or to capture the attention and the affection.
Well, it's almost always. It's almost always at the beginning. It's treated as if I like this girl. I've got to somehow trick her into liking me. Like it's never like I'm right. just going to approach her. There's always an element of like I've got to do something that will make her almost force her, and which is mm-hmm. is kind of weird to think that that's how we think romance is supposed to work,
right?
But
well, and that's sort of yeah, the comedic element, of course, stretches that. But it's interesting, I hadn't kind of articulated in my mind, maybe in thinking about this episode until you said it, is that there is possibly even with the romantic comedy genre, there's many films that I really love in that genre. It's a really narrow tightrope to walk of what you're saying about gender identity, gender roles, misogyny.
Well, we haven't
all those sorts of things, you know, sexual ethics. There's a lot of different things. And probably looking back on particularly 60s and 70s, you realize how much it was a product of its own time. Mm-hmm. And how there may have been messages, stereotypes reinforced that, you know, when you look on it from our more enlightened sort of time now, we kind of look on it and we go, that is a little more creepy than comedic.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I think a lot of romantic comedies have an element of, you know, someone's being coerced into this relationship. I mean, you know, they're not, this is not somebody they picked and they said, oh, I like this guy. It's somebody that they're like, were going along their business and had just not paid any attention to this guy. And somehow he's going to trick them. But now, to be fair, we have had some movies told from the female point of view. And in fact, in the 50s, I would say that the Doris Day, Rock Hudson movies were from both points of view. I don't know that it favored his over hers per se, although it still clearly fit within, you know, parameters for what women in the time. But, you know, for its time, it may have been fairly progressive. I can't swear to that.
Well, it's also interesting what you're saying is that there is an element of romantic comedies, maybe like any movie. It does sort of take you out of some of the reality of the moment that maybe a little bit later after you exit the theater and you think about it, and you're like, oh, no, wait, if this happened in real life, it's sort of separate from that. Yeah. And one of the best examples of that I've heard recently is actually the creators of the show How I Met Your Mother. TV, yes, not movies, but that's a big romantic comedy TV show. And they talk about the main character, Ted, and they say, I mean, really honestly, if you look at some of the stuff like we wrote for this character to do, like if these grand romantic gestures, you're like, oh yeah, he's a creepy stalker guy, you know,
yeah.
And you could probably say that about some of these grand romantic gestures that we love in romantic comedies. But if we saw them in real life, I don't know, you know, John Cusack standing outside your
house. That is the one you got to go to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool in the context of that story. But if you actually did that, I don't know, Peter Gabriel could save you from the cops.
Well, and you think about, you know, most of the relationships in, you know, we've had this conversation before, and it's been talked about a lot beyond just the two of us. But most romantic relationships in films are much older men, and while that certainly does happen in the real world, it doesn't happen without comment in the real world. like when you see a 55-year-old and a even 30-year-old who are dating, you say something about that relationship or you have conversations about it. When you watch it in a movie, it goes unnoticed. Be natural. And I'm not saying that those relationships should not and cannot flourish, but I'm saying that it's not as easy as they make it into because of whatever structural forces are working to make that happen.
And it does seem, you know, there's part of the genre where it's really about, for lack of a better word, and I apologize if this sounds
fantasy.
It's fantasy. I apologize for this sounding probably way more sketchy than I mean it to, but it's kind of about the chase, right? It's about the romance.
Yeah.
It's about a courtship. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that there have been maybe some films that romantic comedy sort of type, but have tried to maybe tackle what happens after that in some sort of way. A movie that was on tonight before we started recording, This Is 40, it sort of bills itself as a romantic comedy, but is a rather depressing one in some ways.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's looking at what happens after, you know, the happy moment where you get together and do that. I'd say some other of kind of Judd Apatow films probably tackle some of the more elements in a relationship. You know, the 40-year-old version, Knocked Up. Less romanticized.
I think of Judd Apatow
in the comedy.
I think of Judd Apatow in particular. Because, you know, when he started, him and Adam Sandler were pretty closely associated. You know, they worked together and they did some stuff, and I think they may have been roommates. But I think of Judd Apatow as being what, like, an Adam Sandler that did grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's trying to, like, instead of staying in this demographic of being, I'm going to make movies for 12-year-olds, he is making movies for grown men or grown people and trying to, like, questions. And there's nothing wrong with either approach necessarily, but I think he is obviously trying to be a more mature as an artist and as a filmmaker than Sandler is.
Well, we've touched on a little bit of some of the concepts, elements, maybe even looking at it from a more critical eye of what are maybe some troubling aspects of these sorts of films. But what is it that you can kind of enjoy about them, and what is maybe kind of the right frame of mind?
Well, you know,
that you need to have to be able to kind of enjoy the film.
A really good romantic comedy has one or two moments, especially the moment when the party that wasn't as into the relationship as the other at the beginning. One or two moments when that epiphany comes, and they usually give some sort of a speech or something that you feel it, and you start feeling. Maybe you get a little teary eyed. Maybe you feel a little goosebumps. Maybe you just, but you're riveted. And that's because those moments transcend whatever the genre is, and they tap into something that we all want and we all need, and that is some deep connection to another person.
Yeah, even
and
if,
that moment.
Yeah, even
is
if
worth
the
it.
Moment. Yeah, even if the moment isn't quite authentic, and that we wouldn't see it happen every day.
Well, the words that are used.
Can really resonate and be truthful.
And that's a deep, you know, whether you're old, whether you're black, whether you're, you know, white, Hispanic, gay, whatever you are, we all have that deep primal urge that we all, when we recognize that, it's something that we all feel ourselves in that place.
The Notting Hill, I'm just a girl telling
standing in front of a boy. Yeah,
chasing Amy, to think I would need a painting to remember who you are.
Yeah, or like you had me at hello, like the whole, you know, those moments. And well, the movie itself may be as cheesy and or it's horrible or not stand up. You know, the ravages of time have destroyed our appreciation of the film, but those moments are just pure magic.
Let's talk about some movies that have those kind of moments, and perhaps some others that have that moments, but we might disagree on whether or not it's a romantic comedy. You actually quoted one of the films that I might come back on you a little bit and say it's not really romantic comedy. So we're going to enter into a short segment of romantic comedy or not romantic comedy.
Okay.
Let's start with that first one. Let's start with Jerry Maguire.
Okay.
Romantic comedy or not a romantic comedy? You have me at hello.
Yes, romantic comedy. I'm saying romantic comedy.
And I say no. I say it's a romantic drama. The comedy elements are great, but they mainly come from a kid, not from the
pursuit
of a
relationship. Well, you got to get your laughs from somewhere. Okay, what about, here's one.
If it's a romantic comedy, it's a romantic comedy by accident.
One that I think, you know, we talked about one similar to this earlier, but how about Teen Wolf, romantic comedy or not?
Teen Wolf,
romantic comedy.
No.
Ooh. Right? I mean,
no.
That's a whole...
No. See, here's going to be my criteria for how we discuss this. If you remove the relationship from the movie, it might be a much poorer movie, but...
Okay.
But the movie could still survive on its own.
Okay, your turn. Your turn. Give me one thing. Your turn.
Okay, Princess Bride.
Princess Bride. Romantic comedy.
I can go with that. It's kind of a mashup of romantic comedy and fantasy film.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it explores the relationship between not a romantic one by any measure, but it explores the relationship between family, telling stories, that kind of stuff. There's a bit of romance. It's not even about physical affection between two people, but, you know, this kind of...
Well, I mean, and Fred Savage is like, gross kissing.
Yeah, but also romantic in a broader sense.
Yeah.
of how we maybe romanticize, idealize certain ideas and traditions, okay, and doing that kind
of thing. What about, here's one that we were discussing before we went on the air. This is not one that I had thought of, but Groundhog Day, romantic comedy.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, as we all know, Groundhog Day being the number one movie on your list, it just kind of transcends.
Yeah, but when I think about, because you asked me before we started, you said, what's your favorite romantic comedy? And I didn't even think of it as being one, but...
I could say, based on my criteria, I think if you took that relationship out of the movie...
it's a different movie.
It can't stand. He never gets out. No. He never gets out if it's not for that. So yeah. I would say... I wouldn't say it's only a romantic comedy, but if you wanted to put it in that genre, yeah, I could agree. I could agree with that. Okay. The Replacements. Keanu Reeves, football, the cheerleader.
I'm gonna say no.
Okay. All right. Now again, I probably think you're right, no, but again, if you think of romance as broader, this romantic ideal of football and sports and you know, having your heroic moment in the sun, you could maybe...
Here's one.
Maybe make a case
Here's
for
one.
It.
In and Out.
Oh, that's a good question, too. I would say yes.
Although he doesn't really fall in love with anyone, right?
Well, but he comes to terms with himself.
But that's not the same as romance.
Well, yeah, I guess not, but that one's hard.
Well, and it's also one of the only examples I can think of a movie with a predominantly or a primary gay character who is in a romantic comedy situation. Like, that's just not...
Well, at least in terms of mainstream, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
and that's been... And that's
I'm sure there are a number of films
I'm
out
sure there are others, but I'm just saying... Only one I can think of, and it's 20 years old.
Listeners, you tell us what do you think makes a romantic comedy? What makes a romantic comedy good? What are some films that you would suggest as romantic comedies that others may not think exactly romantic comedies? Let us know by visiting us at 10K Movies, T-E-N-K Movies on Twitter, by visiting Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. We move now, though, into our top five. Our top five romantic comedy couples or relationships. Again, not necessarily the movie. So if you think Pretty Woman is one of the best romantic comedies of all time, great. But if you also think that Richard Gere and Julia Roberts don't have the best chemistry of any other couple, then it's not going to make necessarily Brian's top five. I don't think the movie would make Brian's top five either, to be completely honest. But that's kind of the criteria we're using. The relationships we like the most and buy the most, not necessarily the movie as a whole. So, Brian, what is your fifth ranking of... Okay. Romantic comedy relationships.
Okay, number five, I'm cheating a little bit, and I've got a tie. It's a tie between Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, as evidenced in 50 First Dates, and Katherine Hepburn and Cary Grant in Bringing Up Baby.
All right, and why did they tie?
Well, they tie because, if there's an edge, it's a very slight edge between the two. I think they're both kind of... They have similar relationships in the fact that they're both kind of a silly, kind of a very playful, not very serious kind of relationship. And ironically, I think that Drew plays the straight person to Adam, but I think the opposite is true in the earlier film. I think Cary Grant is playing more of a straight person to Katherine Hepburn's zaniness in Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah. And I know also your love for the ending part of 50 First Dates.
I love
so
it.
I'm not surprised to have that in the fifth. So I'm guessing also one of the reasons gets them in your top five is just the devotion that relationship in
yes.
that movie.
Yes. And because it it just feels like if you ask people of a certain age that, you know, the movies they've been in together, they have a clear chemistry. Right. Number four, coming in with, based on really just one movie, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. When Harry Met Sally is just so good and so perfect and so, and I think more so than even what we were talking about earlier, it doesn't have that element of trying to trick somebody. It's kind of two people that are reluctant and fight against it, and they kind of fall, one of them falls in and one of them falls out, and it's kind of a crisscross path, but that they can,
yeah, develops a much longer time than most romantic comedies. Sure.
Yeah, so it feels real. It feels like a real, and you know, and she's like a big person for any romantic, or, you know, Meg Ryan circa late 80s, early 90s is the perfect person for.
Well, and two things, too, that tell you that relationship could stand anything. One, Billy Crystal wore a really bad wig in the first 10, 15 minutes of that movie. So anyone who could act like he's an attractive man after that, good on you.
Yeah.
And number two, again, the ending scene, just the part where, you know, they're talking after all these other, you know, longtime married couples have been featured in the movie, and they're finally talking, and you see, yeah, that wittiness and how they really are kind of like two people that just kind of fit together.
It feels real. I mean, it feels like a real relationship. Number three, a movie that we've talked about a little bit earlier, but is one of my favorites just because of like I said, that one pivotal scene. And this is Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts. And Notting Hill, to me, is one of the best romantic comedies of the past, certainly 20 years. And that scene where you know, and she's more or less playing herself in the movie. But that scene where she has finally realized that she wants him now.
Right.
Him and pursuing him is just so perfect. It's so perfect.
And that's another one to me too. It doesn't have that trickery element to it.
No.
It's, you know, the challenge, you know, the part where the comedy comes from is just simply because of her character's celebrity and his character's ordinariness. That's kind of what makes you have to go to great heights.
Well,
to get them
the funniest
together.
Stuff in the movie are the background characters, like Spike. Spike is the funniest thing in the movie. Like that. So the comedy sort of flows around movies. Number two, we're going back to the well again. I said Meg Ryan was one of the perfect people for romantic comedies, and while she was good with Billy Crystal, she is so much better with Tom Hanks.
Right. I mean, which Tom Hanks movie would you?
I'm gonna go Sleepless. I'm going
to see. I would have to. I agree. I like their chemistry. I think they are one of. But I would take the You've Got Mail relationship over the Sleepless. They're never on the screen together in Sleepless until the very end.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying that movie gets me better. It gets me more than You've Got Mail does, because it's like a love letter to romantic movies. Which is also,
and I guess
they do
a good job in that movie. Maybe it's a testament because they're not on screen together that you do buy the story, and you do buy that there's a relationship between these two, even though they've never met.
Well, I think that's, you know, Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail helped to like just make Tom Hanks as being every man. You know, I mean, like he's the guy that you just, if you want a person who represents all that is good and right in America, and you choose Tom Hanks.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just, you know. But number one, though, just because of sheer nostalgia and just my affection for the two people involved, it's Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. They think they are the greatest love story Hollywood ever gave us. And some of that is because, you know, they had an affair, but they wound up being together for 30 years. And I'm just in love with both of them.
Right.
He reminds me of like everybody's perfect grandfather, like the perfect idea of what your grandfather should be like.
Right.
And you close your eyes to me, and that's Spencer Tracy. And then, you know, she's not quite the perfect grandmother, but she's this feisty older lady that, you know, I just love the idea of them together. And I love the idea that they met, you know, doing a film like this, and then their relationship was, the chemistry was so real they maintained a relationship for 30, 40 years after that.
Well, thank you so much. Listeners, again, tell us what you think of Brian's top five. Who did he get right? Who did he get wrong? What other couples did he just completely miss?
And I may have.
Let us know on Twitter at 10K Movies or Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. We hope that you have enjoyed this episode. As we move on into our other genre discussions, I think probably next we are going to tackle the superhero movie, kind of be an extension of some of the movies we've already discussed from this summer, Suicide Squad, Doctor Strange, and talking about where superhero movies may be going in our estimation. So we hope you'll join us for that in 2 weeks. Until then, we hope you have a happy Thanksgiving wherever you are, and that this week of all weeks is a 10.
10 plus.
Border. Not for a man of time.